The initial recommendation that was in there a week ago, which talked about 250,000 contractors, saving of $18 billion, was based on, according to the report, Paul Light's shadow workforce analysis, where he's talked for years about these 8 million contractors supporting the work of government.
Right.
The problem is that it's a fallacious baseline. The 8 million figure that he comes up with is actually an econometric model that says what is the effect of the spend of a government contract dollar, and it's all of the ripple effect. So it's by definition, in the report itself, his report, it talks about direct and indirect. So if I'm building a plant in Wheeling, West Virginia, and I want to know what the broader economic impact of that plant is, not only direct employment, but Starbucks employees and new schools or whatever it might be, that's the model he used is the model you would use to do that. In this case, that's not what we're talking about. We're only talking about direct employment, first of all. Secondly, he includes in his analysis all products, pencils, computers, all that kind of stuff, which is a huge percentage of government contract spending, but of course has nothing to do with, quote, the work of government. You're really looking, when we talk about the work of government, it's contractors performing services for the most part for the government. So his baseline is the wrong one from which to begin to measure the role of contractors, and presumably the commission figured that out, that was actually not an appropriate baseline. Second, a reduction in contractors would happen as a corollary to a reduction in programs. So calling it out separately kind of makes no sense. As you begin to reduce programs or reduce requirements, then you would naturally have some reduction in the number of contractors who were doing that work or supporting that work. Where I think I get a little tangled and a little concerned is that it continues to reference specific cuts in the federal workforce. And frankly, even pay freezes.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem to me from a strategic perspective, if you're really looking for systemic and sustainable cost reductions, that's the way you should go about it. The commission has a recommendation in there that talks about empowering agencies to really dig deep and really find unnecessary requirements, unnecessary programs, redundancies, bureaucratic processes, and other things that are driving costs that can be removed. If you did that as a collaborative process, which is the right way to do it, and this is the way the British are doing it because they have this very kind of austerity program underway today. If you really had agencies really sat down with their grantees and their contractors and their stakeholders and so forth and really dug deep into programs to figure out where are we doing things we don't need to be doing, where can we pull unnecessary cost out of, where can we reduce mission, you could achieve some very sustainable change. And you need when you do that, you need to be sort of agnostic as to who's doing the work because it's really about the work being done. And therefore to have that, but also which I think is a good idea, they have recommended that. But then you have on top of that a workforce reduction, civil service workforce reduction, pay freezes. That seems to me to be politically popular, but probably not really very strategic. And actually could harm the agencies. If they may need to be hiring some more higher priced people. Who knows? They aren't necessarily consistent.
Well, and that's been part of, as I was reading through the recommendations, you know, I always heard agencies say, we want to find the best person for the best job, you know, get that fit. And that's if you have that, if you have a good contracting official, if you have a good procurement person, well, that's good for government. That's good for industry as well.
Well, exactly. You need good program managers. You need good systems engineers. You need good cost and pricing people. You need good IT people. The only way you can be effective as an institution of any kind, company, university, government, doesn't really matter, is if you have the appropriate core capability to either execute your own mission or to manage and oversee and work with your outside providers. And so having a pay freeze may inhibit your ability to do that. Having hiring freezes or direct hiring reductions, depending on how they're done. You know, the history is not terribly encouraging here, where typically when we've had FTE ceilings or FTE reductions, they're not as strategic as they need to be. And you send to folks who can find other work, which are those of very ones that you need to keep,
right,
are often the first to bail and say, okay, I'll go because there's opportunities in the private sector or elsewhere.
Well, and in fact, we saw in the Clinton years where we hacked away at contracting and procurement people, and in some ways, we're still paying the price for that.
Well, what we did is we just included them in the bundle, right? It wasn't strategic. And so you know, for instance, at the Defense Department where I was during those years, we were taking almost a third reduction in the defense infrastructure through base realignment and closure in the post-Cold War environment and so forth. And so sort of everybody got hit almost equally rather than saying, okay, well, what's going to be important even going into the future? What do I need to build? Where can I reduce? And it's really hard to do. It's not something government traditionally does very well. But if we're really serious about, as I said, sustainable and systemic cost savings, that's the only real way to get at it.
And part of my concern as I've read all this is a lot of it seems like the across the board, instead of doing the really hard thing, which is to say, hold on, what programs are really valuable, really essential to what government does? What are nice to have and what maybe we don't need to have at all? That seems like a much more nuanced, kind of conversation, but one that we really need to be having.
Exactly. And the commission does recommend that. And I think that's a good recommendation. It's in the report. But I think when you do that, then you don't need to do things like target any sector. Say we're going to cut a certain number of civil servants, or we're going to do this. You may want to have some forcing functions in there. And again, I think that you know, particularly when you're dealing with the civil service, where if I cut a program, my tendency is to reassign people or find other work because it's not that easy to riff or otherwise eliminate positions. You may want to have some sort of forcing function or targets, but to just arbitrarily say we're going to reduce the workforce by 10%, we're going to freeze pay for 3 years. Frankly, if you freeze pay for 3 years and you reduce the workforce, that may sound good, but when you go to try to hire the people you need, you're going to have a harder time hiring them. And so I think that if you look at one of the main reasons people go into government, aside from the mission, is stability.
Yeah.
And so now you're creating instability at a time when what you really need to do is, yes, you need to dramatically reduce costs, but as you said, you need to be able to attract the right people to the right positions. And if you do all of these things that they're talking about, it could actually tie your hands.
And I've heard a lot of folks discuss in terms of the pay freeze that this might actually be, that this might take the wind out of the whole insourcing movement, because there's going to be who's going to want to go be insourced if you're going to have your pay frozen for 2 years. Is that too simplistic?
I don't know that it's simplistic. I think it was already a factor, as people realize, even people who've come in over the last year or two, that there's a finite possible opportunities, given the nature of the general service pay schedules and SES pay and so forth. But clearly, it would exacerbate that. But I think insourcing in general, again, becomes less religious now and much more fiscally focused. And what we have not seen, particularly at DOD, is a real fiscal discipline around making insourcing decisions where you're dealing with positions where you have an option as to who performs the work. The civilian agencies have been a lot more strategic and targeted in terms of really looking for critical skills. But you're right. If I'm looking at critical skills and there's a pay freeze and the pay is already perhaps even below what the normal commercial market might pay for that kind of skill, how do I get you to come into government? I fear that some of the reports that have come out, other analyses that have come out, and I think you all probably reported on them, and I know you did because I was on Francis's show one day. We talked about it. These reports that said that federal employees are dramatically overpaid.
Right.
Well, the BLS came out with some pretty good statistics to show that that's actually not the case, and there is a pay gap. And the gap gets greater with the more sophisticated skills, and arguably it's those more sophisticated skills that are most short supply in the government. So if you have a pay freeze, you're not even getting to the nature, to the root of the problem you're having in recruiting and retaining folks.
Yeah, it becomes, and some of the surveys which said double the average pay for a Fed is double that of the private sector. Yes, that may be true, but it's one of these statistics that doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, it doesn't mean very much, and it's actually not terribly accurate. I think that as you look, I think it was the Bureau of Labor Statistics had the study that you all reported on, and that talked about is as you go up the chain of capability, the gap begins to grow. So if you're dealing with sort of blue collar wage grade work, the government's very competitive.
Yeah.
But the further up you go, it becomes less and less competitive. And just look at the Intel community, and again, you all looked at this. You've had Ron Sanders on. He's talked about half of our contractors are very specialized high-end skill sets that we can't afford to attract. So there are pay gaps. And I think big picture is what the commission has done, or the chairman, and this is really the chairman's mark. It's their equivalent of a chairman's mark. They've put a bunch of stuff on the table for the commission to vote on. And some of it has political, a lot of it has political ramifications in both directions. My concern would be there are some very good recommendations in there relative to government management that could be superseded by the ones that actually kind of ring bells more loudly.
So with this age of austerity, how nervous should contractors be?
I think everybody realizes that there's austerity to come. The only question is, what does it look like, and how deep does it go? Everybody's nervous, whether you're a federal employee or a contractor. We don't know how deep or where the cuts are actually going to be, and we're a long way from really identifying, as you said, what programs don't we need? What can we stop doing? I think the bigger question right now is, how are we going to do it? And again, I if you look at, for instance, how the United Kingdom is doing it, you know, they're on a massive austerity campaign in England. And some agencies are facing 20 to 25% budget reductions. Their Defense Department, their Ministry of Defense is facing about an 8 to 10% reduction. But what they're doing is they're sitting down with their implementing partners, whether they're grantees, NGOs, companies, whomever, and they're really trying to work collaboratively to figure out where can we pull cost out of the system. And most any acquisition person in government you talk to or their contractors will tell you, if we could sit down unfettered and really have a conversation and really partner on this, we can find 10 or 12% savings because there's so much unnecessary stuff in the system, whether it's requirements we don't need or bureaucratic processes or whatever. So the question is not only how nervous should you be, it's kind of hard to predict because we don't know what this actually looks like in the end, but the other question becomes, how do you go about doing it?